Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Duncan Brown. How are you, Duncan?
Very well, thanks. How about you, Chris?
I'm very good, very good. I'm just sort of enjoying the scene here at Australia Day. There's not as much carnage as it's been a while since I've been to the Australia Day tasting, to be honest. I think it's been about 4 years, 5 years, so... It's a bit different. Last time I think I went to it, it was in Arsenal's football ground.
That's a while back. You're showing your age there, Chris.
Yeah, I know. Have they been here quite a while?
The last few have been here, and to be honest, it seems to be buzzing even more this year than previous years. It's packed out there, isn't it?
Excellent. Well, Duncan, you're from Brown Brothers, and what I want to talk about is Brown Brothers probably has one of the quirkiest wine ranges in Australia. You know, it's got everything that you can't pronounce and then more so. And let's face it, the Aussies have got some strange pronouncing places and things, and your great varieties reflect that.
Absolutely.
Before we get into that, maybe we should look at the laddering, because, you know, a lot of Australian producers, you're a mid-sized producer, but a lot of Australian producers have a ladder. They'll have a premium range, a mid-range, and then a volume range or something like that. How does Brown Brothers do their ladder, if you like?
Well, with over 100 wines, we do need laddering, and we work with 50 different grape varieties that create different styles. So it makes no sense to have them under one label or one name or sub-brand. So our biggest range is what we would call the fruity or fruit-forward range, and that includes wines that have had their fermentation arrested a little bit earlier to leave a bit of residual sugar, but they're made in a very premium way nonetheless. So we've got Moscatos, we've got Siennas that make up most of this range. Next up is what we call the John Charles Brown Explorer series, and this is really a nod to the Brown Brothers tradition through the generations of exploring the viticultural world and bringing back weird and wonderful grape varieties. So this includes wines like Tarango, Dry Muscat, Pinot Gris, Flora and grape varieties like that. Next up is what we call the 1889 range, or the range with the chair on the label, and this is single vineyards, dry wines, classic varietals. So our Heathcote Shirazes, our Banksdale Chardonnays, our Tasmanian Sauvignon Blancs, those wines. And after that, we've got limited release or vintage release, which are single block wines. And they're normally only released through the cellar door. So we've got Shiraz, Chardonnay, Duriff, wines of that kind, and Prosecco even, believe it or not.
Glera, I think you'll find it's called these
days.
Well,
that is debatable. And if you're Italian, you'll insist on Glera. We believe we're on firm legal footing to call it Prosecco, but there you go.
Even in the UK?
Not in the UK, no.
In Australia?
In Australia and everywhere else in the world outside the EU.
Yeah, fair enough too.
Above that level, we've then got the Patricia range, which sits at the top of our tree in honour of second generation Patricia Brown. And these are wines that represent the top of our dry winemaking capabilities. They're not released every vintage, so maybe two or three per 5 years. We've got a top sparkling wine, a Pinot Chardonnay, 5.5 years on its fine lees, a very special Shiraz Cabernet, and a noble Riesling, which is a direct descendant of the first nobly rotted Riesling in Australia.
Okay, so that's what, five layers, is it?
Absolutely,
That's quite a lot of layering, isn't it?
It is.
I suppose if you've got 100 wines, you need, that's still 20 wines per layer, it's quite good. I find it, it's interesting right at the very bottom end, that's when you sort of make your slightly sweeter, fruited forward styles.
Yep.
You know, there is this view that sweet wines are a bit cheap and for the masses sort of thing. Yeah, that your laddering sort of reinforces that.
It does and it doesn't, because actually our sweeter or fruity style wines start at about £8 retail and go up to £13. Within Australia, where we've seen the most success with this range, we lead from the front. We're the number one producer of this style of wines. But our Moscato, for example, is twice the retail price of our closest Moscato competitor. And yet, our Moscato is Australia's number one Australian wine.
Okay, it was interesting. I was having a look at you saying the alcohol in your Moscato is 5.5%.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I was a bit shocked by that because I mentioned this to you because a New Zealand producer just had their lower alcohol wine banned from Europe or from the UK because it was below 8.5%. If it's not below 8.5%, it doesn't get counted as wine in Europe. So how the heck did Brown Brothers sneak their 5.5%er in and still call it wine, whereas New Zealanders have to call it reconcentrated table juice, something horrible name?
I believe it's because we grow our wine in Australia. And I believe there's a bilateral agreement between the two trading blocks, and so it's perfectly legal for Australia to do so.
Oh, that's just tough, isn't it? Okay, so 5.5%, and that was the classic Moscato, you know, low alcohol, sweet, quite nice. I quite enjoyed that. You gave me a sort of a light red that was sweet and fizzy as well.
Yeah, Arsiano, which breaks all the rules for a red wine. Absolutely, yeah.
Is that in the entry-level range?
That's part of that entry-level range.
What do you call the range again?
Fruity or fruit-forward range.
Fruit-forward range, okay. Yeah.
And basically, Siena is a genetic cross between Cabernet Sauvignon and an obscure grape from Spain, northwest Spain, called Sumol. We produce it where we arrest the fermentation. We grow it as we would a premium grape. We arrest the fermentation at 6.5% alcohol. That leaves us with some residual sweetness left over. And we also capture some of that fizz in the bottle, so that it's got natural fizz to it. And it's a wine that we serve chilled and recommend with curries, particularly spicy hot curries, because the lower alcohol doesn't inflame the spice.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant with things like chocolate mousse. So it's actually more versatile than you'd think.
Yeah. Who drinks that? You know, is it sort of mums or dads, or what's in Australia? Where's the market for that?
Well, it's got both men and women in Australia drinking it, but it's got a slight bias towards men. And this is where it started off in its origin. The couples would come into the winery and we'd offer a white, and they'd ask for a sweet white. We'd offer them the Moscato or the Cruchon Riesling or Cruchon Sauvignon. And then we'd offer that to the men, and the men would, of course, turn around and say, "Nah, mate, don't drink any wine. I drink beer." And
you do that very well.
Thanks. And we'd say, "Well, we haven't got any beer here. Can we introduce some red wine? You know, manly wine." And they're saying, "Nah, red wine's just a bit too bitter." And so we say, "Well, try this one," which was a sweet one, and it worked on that first experimental year. And then we just couldn't keep up with demand. Every year we doubled, tripled production, but we'd run out within the first few months of release.
Okay. All right, so that's your Siena, is it?
Siena, yeah.
Siena, okay, that's easy to remember. I tried a Moscato, I think, but you squeezed in some lemon essence or put some lemon essence. That's really not the done thing in wine. You know, what's your thinking there?
Very iconoclastic, very naughty. Basically, if you go back to the 1980s, the traditional trade in the UK was very sniffy about the new world wines coming in. They weren't proper wines. They're far too easy to drink, far too fruity, far too nice. But actually what they did, they brought in a new generation of wine drinkers and expanded, created a boom in wine in the UK. I believe the next revolution to happen after that one from the 1980s with the new world is this fruity category that includes wines that have got fruit essence in, but also if wines that have no fruit essence but simply have had the fermentation arrested. They appeal to a younger generation, the millennial generation, who are more used to craft beers, berry ciders, and who haven't got the patience or the time to study a wall of wine with labels that don't tell them anything about the way the wine tastes inside the bottle. So this is where our Zibibo Flavors Citrus Crush comes in, because in Ron Seal style, it does just what it says on the tin. It's called Citrus Crush because it's got some citrus natural essences as part of the blend, and it tastes citrusy, and hopefully will appeal to that generation.
And Zibibo, you called it Zibibo.
Yes.
I know it was Muscat.
Yes.
I didn't really know it was Zibibo, it was Muscat until I spoke to you earlier.
Yeah.
Why not call it Muscat? Muscat's an easy name to remember. You know, most people use it. You're just trying to confuse people with these unusual grape names.
Absolutely. No, we kind of got the market cornered for Moscato in Australia. So we thought we'd create a new category. And what better name than the name that they use in Sicily for the Moscato grape, Zibibbo, which has Arabic origins. So it gave us a point of difference, and it enabled us to create a wine style and a packaging that was a little less traditional and appealed to a younger generation.
Okay, what's the most unusual grape variety you've got at Browns?
Probably one that's secret at the moment.
Oh, and, you can't tell me.
It's got a technical name, and we call it MO3.
MO3, that's fabulous. That sounds really good. That's catchy on that.
It is, and it's deep-coloured and quite full-bodied, but relatively naturally low alcohol. And we're at the moment sending out samples to all of the Brown Brothers Wine Club members, and we're waiting for them to send back their proposals for a new name. And once that's drawn out of the hat, we'll have our new innovative, iconoclastic wine.
Is it a crossing you guys have done yourself?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Okay. And it's naturally low in alcohol. So what sort of alcohol levels are you hitting?
We're talking around 10, 11% alcohol.
Dry or?
Dry.
Yeah. Okay. So what does that mean? Is that in response to the sort of a move to lower alcohol wines? Or?
It's in response to the move towards lower alcohol wines, but also to a globe that's heating up. We wanted to be able to produce some wines in a warmer climate that weren't hitting the 14, 15, 16% alcohols.
And what's it a crossing of? Are you allowed to
say? Can't tell you.
Can't tell me?
Because I don't know.
Oh, you don't know? Fair enough. No, it's not MI3, it's MO3.
MO3.
Okay, fair enough. All right. I tried a Tarango earlier.
Absolutely, yeah.
You see Tarango about.
Yep.
What is Tarango?
Okay, well, I mean, Tarango is a bit of a classic in the UK. It was introduced 30 years ago into the UK. It's actually a cross between Touriga Nacional from Portugal and the humble Sultana grape.
Sultana, not really made for white, not good wine anyway, and Touriga Nacional is one of the great grapes of the world.
Absolutely,
so.
Absolutely.
So that's a real crossing.
Yeah, so we make it in a style.
Did you guys cross it yourselves? Or?
No, that was done by someone else, but we're the main producers of that wine grape variety. But, and we found that the style, having tried different styles, we found that a light red style, almost a rosé, not quite, that you can chill down, not too many tannins, nice acidic balance, lovely spicy berried fruits. It's great on its own on a summer's day, but also good in winter to accompany things like pork belly or tuna steaks or roast chicken. So a good food wine as well as a wine to enjoy on its own.
Yeah, it's interesting. You're sort of doing all the meats that you'd normally have a heavy white with, but you're going for a light red.
Absolutely.
So it's more like that Beaujolais style.
Beaujolais or the Loire.
Not even Beaujolais, more like... Well, because you get Beaujolais Cruz, which got a lot more tannins and structure, so more the sort of cheaper end of Beaujolais. Okay, well, I shouldn't have really said that. That's a bit mean. What's the most unusual grape variety you guys got there that we haven't mentioned?
Well, we've got lots like Mondeuz, which originally comes from Savoy and was introduced via François de Castellar, who was the government advisor post-phylloxera for rebuilding the vineyards in Victoria. We create a unique blend using Mondeuz.
How do you say that?
Mondeuz, M-O-N-D-E-U-S-E.
Mondeuz.
Mondeuz, okay. Yeah. And it's one of those grape varieties that if you do a co-ferment, it turbo boosts that blend. So we co-ferment it with Cabernet and Shiraz. And we pick all three at the same time, obviously, in order to achieve this co-ferment. And we've done this since 1953. And it's a bit of a signature wine for Brown Brothers within Australia.
Oh, I haven't seen that here. Is it not exported or not common in the UK?
It's no longer common, but I'm hoping that we can bring it back in the next few years.
Okay. And the other one I noticed is you guys call your one of your wines a Duriff or Duriff.
Yep.
Duriff. You see that in the States, but they call it Petit Serra in the States,
correct,
don't they?
Correct, yeah.
Which is the more common name?
Well, in the States, Petit Serra, but in Australia, everyone seems to call it Duriff. And it's a great variety that's seeing more planting going on in the last few years. It's great in hot climates. It was designed in the south of France in the 19th century, and it's great because in a hotter climate it creates a wine that slightly less alcoholic than Shiraz, but it's got more structure, so more tannins, more acidity, fresher fruit. A wine for long-term keeping.
Last week you were saying that Brown Brothers does a lot of innovation.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, we have heard about the MO3 coming up.
Yeah.
What else is being sort of worked on?
We don't work only with grapes that are newly created. We also source new grape material from around the world and bring new ones in every year. So in our experimental winery, the kindergarten, as we call it, we tend to do eight new grape varieties per year. And for each of those, We'll try vinifying them in six different ways. We'll pick three grape varieties in the ways that have been vinified that we like the best every year, and we'll trial them through the cellar door because we're on the ski route, and so we get up to 80,000 people a year through the cellar door, and the samples are free. But we also get a lot of information and data on what people like. So this year's three are what I would call the three Gs, the Grüne Veltliner, Grillo, and Gamay. Grillo hasn't gone too well. So
that's the red grape that's normally in the Loire. Grillo.
Grillo. So this is the white grape variety from Sicily.
Oh, okay.
So you'd have thought Sicily, warm climate.
Yeah, yeah.
It would work well for us in Australia. For us at Brown Brothers, it hasn't. So we'll grub that up probably. Grüne Veltliner from Austria originally, planted in our Banksdale vineyard higher up in the King Valley. Jury's out on that. We'll see how it performs in the next few vintages. Gamay is looking really good.
Gamay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gamay you can make, well, Beaujolais really, can't you? So another one of these light reds?
Well, more of a cru style.
More of a cru style, a bit more tannic, a bit more structure.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Another one that we make that's a little bit more in a Pobin style is our Tempranillo. We've been very successful with that. We're planting a lot more Tempranillo vineyards at the moment. And about a quarter of that is carbonic maceration to make it into a fruit forward, but dry. And a very juicy style.
Okay. You mentioned that some of the makes it into your cellar door. I would have thought a lot of the wine would make it into the cellar door, even if it's just to flush it through. It's going to be cheaper to pour it down people's gullets than it is down the sink.
No, well, I think that would give Brown Brothers a bad name. And this is why we built the kindergarten winery with lots of small vats so that we could do micro trials, basically. So if we make a mistake, it's not a big mistake. And we don't show it, basically.
All right then, Duncan. I think we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much for your time.
Great. Thanks a lot, Chris.
Cheers, bud.
Cheers.